Next item. Last item. Executive officer's report. So I'll just walk through it sequentially, and you can stop if you have questions. First is the 401 certification table that includes the certifications received and the certifications issued for the period of June 10th to August 2nd.
I have one question. Yeah, Chair Wolf. Can you just give me a little more clarity on on page two? So the first item in that table on page two, water pipeline across Old Creek to move water from a new well to existing irrigation system. I understand that new wells are being drilled to support irrigation, but this is a new one, a new twist on that. I was just wondering, has this been coming up? I haven't caught it if it has, but.
With respect to frequency?
Yeah, and what does that mean design-wise? What is it? How do you do that? Do you go under the creek or you go over the creek or? It's up to CDFA.
Because, you know, as RCD, we get involved with quite a few projects like that, and the decision is made by CDFA whether you go above using cable tie-ins versus under. And it all depends on the structure. If the structure is outside of the, you know, influence of the riparian areas, of the shoulders, as it's called, of the creek, then you kind of go above. So they're the one who would make the decision.
So we don't have any say in that as part of our role in this.
I think we can try to direct them away from having, you know, impacts.
Right.
So, I guess we can affect their strategy on some level, but yeah, I think Fish and Wildlife in that case probably has precedent.
Mm-hmm. And when they submit their application, that type of information isn't included. And I mean, you don't already know what CDFA is planning to do.
Yes, you do, because
you do.
Sorry, they've already issued their decision.
Yeah, because when you review the information, you know that you have to have shown, did you contact CDFA, yes, no, what did you do, did you contact NOAA, yes, no, what did you do, so that's all part of the package submission.
Okay. It's just for my own.
Sorry, I didn't mean to
butt in. You have direct experience with this.
Yes.
Very relevant.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move on to Shell Hercules Cañada de la Huerta. This is a 28-year-old cleanup project. Harvey and I have both supervised it. That's how long it's been around when we were caseworkers. Ballpark, sure. Yeah, I was nine then. Just kidding. So in the EO report, there's some photographs showing you some before and after excavations, the excavation photographs, and then subsequent revegetation. That is not photographs. That's currently ongoing. This is a significant milestone in this project. I'll back up and say this is primarily focused at PCB discharge in that canyon. And canyon is between the Tahigas landfill and the Gaviota turn on 101, you know, for frame of reference. And it's significant because of the length and investment that all the agencies have put into it, as well as Shell, ERA, and It has been a very complicated project. PCB cleanup by its nature is very complicated. So we're on the cusp of a success story there. We're not quite there. Revegetation has to happen, and we'd like to see documented monitoring to show that the cleanup was effective. But
soil site now, because Casmalia is closed.
Where's it going to?
Yeah.
I suspect that it's going to, West Hill.
Oh, okay.
You know, the facility there. I can't think of the name right now. It evades me. But there's the West Hill Class 1 facility out there.
Thank you.
Sure.
One question, noting relative to monitoring, and the concluding paragraph, there's a note there about monitoring continual source of toxic pollutants to onshore as well as ocean environments. And will it include any kind of offshore monitoring?
Can ask Harvey if he knows the answer to that.
I don't know the answer, but I agree it should. Yeah. Now, this is the site I mentioned this morning where it was a known toxic hotspot in the ocean. They should be doing post cleanup sampling of various media, including the ocean. So we'll check on that.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I would like to know.
So I mentioned that they would do post-excavation confirmation sampling. I anticipate that would be in the watershed itself as precursor to what's going to get to the ocean, you know, as an earlier indicator.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's in proximity to an MPA, but that would also be interesting to know what the nearest MPA location is in direction of the current and potential for impacting the MPA?
Right. So based on Karen's imagery this morning, the closest MPA was at the, you know, how we have it an east-west coastline in that area.
Right.
Uh-huh. And then you wrap and go around the point.
Right.
And hit north-south. And the closest MPA was on that change in orientation of the coastline right there.
Is it west or east?
To the west,
as
you head towards Point Conception.
And that's why I'm asking, because that's where the currents
right. So the longer drift there is to the east.
Okay.
It's dragging materials to the east.
To the east, so not likely. Yeah. Okay.
Less likely, but you do see backdrift. I mean, we saw backdrift off of the oil spill at Refugio,
mm-hmm.
for example. It moved counter to the longshore drift,
mm-hmm.
and that's not unexpected. There's some kind of gyre moving backwards too.
So since that probably coincides with the CKM monitoring site, but it's not in the current cycle. It will not be the 2017 cycle. Correct.
It's in a very small drainage. We don't have we have a monitoring site in a nearby drainage, but not that one.
Not that,
so
okay.
So we're in a different watershed.
Oh, okay, all right. Thank you.
Any more questions?
Michael commented that it was the original detection was picked up through CKM data, but since it's not in the current cycle, I don't know where it how long it'll be before you get back there.
The history, it actually was not picked up. In fact, the original data came from several years before CKM started.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was managing the toxic hotspot cleanup program at the time, which did sampling in several likely problem areas in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, we came up with Moss Landing as our big toxic hot spot, but we had additional data, and I can't remember which staff person was working on it at the time, but they asked me to evaluate that data that was collected at the site.
I see.
By the, I don't remember if it was regional board data or the program proponents data, but so we evaluated it. That's how it got on the list. So it came in a little bit sideways.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
The question is then, are we going to, what's going to be our mechanism for doing ocean monitoring to or for requiring Shell or whatever to do ocean monitoring to be sure that the problem has actually been resolved? Are we requiring Shell to do that?
Yes.
Indirectly, we're not the lead agency, it's a DTSC run site. And actually, federal EPA takes control of PCB cleanups, but we will use what influence we have on that.
Yeah, given that you're involved in the discussions. Yeah.
Right, we're along for the ride there.
So you can reflect our questions to that group. Yeah.
And the monitoring expectation, yeah. Okay, moving on. The next item is a information bit on the integrated report, which really focuses on the 303D list, which will be in front of the board at the December board meeting. And that is currently out for public comment, as you heard yesterday. And I didn't mention this yesterday, except to Kay Mercer, who was a commenter, but we're locked into a very tight schedule driven by State Board, and there is no flux available in that schedule to push the comment period back. If we don't hold to the schedule, we won't have an opportunity as a board to adopt or have any action or a local input. And I communicated that to Kay, and actually our staff, Mary Hamilton, and also already communicated that with Kay before the meeting. So she was already aware of it when I got back to talk to her about this.
John?
Yes?
When the July meeting, the ag interested folks expressed some concerns about the 303 listing proposed, have those concerns been discussed between staff and ag since then?
I'm not sure. Based on my conversation with Kay in the back of the room yesterday afternoon, she indicated she hadn't gone through the full commentable material that was available for the integrated list. So I'm not sure if she was prepared to have that dialogue with Mary or other staff at this point. And as far as other commenters, I'm not aware, or other individuals who potentially would have comment, I'm not aware. Like, I'm thinking of Abby, perhaps. Abby and I have been on the phone several times in the last 3 weeks, and she has not made any mention of that to me. So. Right. Right. And I know that Kay has been in contact with Mary Hamilton regularly. Kay was gracious enough to let Mary know that she was going to come and make this comment yesterday. And so Kay has full understanding of where to go if she has questions and seeks resolution on some issue or clarity on some issue. She knows that Mary is in place to start with that conversation.
Do you think that staff has digested their public comment from July and made sure that staff was still comfortable with the wording and the proposed 303 material?
I'm not aware of specific requested changes that from the July meeting, I guess I would say. I'm not aware of specific changes that they would make. What we would anticipate is those comments would come in as part of this comment period that we're in right now that's about to close. And then we could respond, staff could respond to those, you know. It would be meatier, you know. We'd have some clarity on what the specific issue was at that point. Okay. Okay. Moving on. We briefly mentioned this Cambria surface water story, I'll call it. It's actually characterized as notes from the field, I believe, in your EO report. And this is another one of those, I think, success stories that Karen alluded to in her presentation this morning by virtue of a different strategy with their highly treated wastewater. We're moving away from nitrate issues in the San Simeon Creek. And you can see that the data I'm on page 11 of the EO report. On that graph, you can see how the data associated with nitrate just drops off precipitously for 2016.
So, according to the same page you mentioned, page 10, it seems that below the municipal wastewater plant, the concentrations are 42 times zero what they are above it. As far as I see, recently it was 4.2, and upstream it's 0.1. So is that due to the wastewater treatment?
Right, so the dry season average was 12.1 milligrams per liter in 2014 and dropped to 4.2 in 2015.
If it's 4.2 below and 0.1 above, is that delta due to the wastewater treatment?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, the upgrades to the strategy of handling their wastewater. Yeah.
And what was the threshold that we wanted it below?
So I think it's 10 in that case.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I was going with the drinking water standard.
This is Karen. We use 1 milligram per liter for aquatic life, accompanied by evidence of eutrophication, so it would be like algae blooms or lodeo. The last three measurements we took, I don't know if you can tell this on the graph, because I don't have it in front of me, were non-detects, though. And actually, they're not in our database yet. They're hand-entered onto this graph from the field lab copies that just came in. So they're all the way down at our detection level, which was really rather remarkable.
What are the changes that they made that caused this?
It wasn't any major physical changes to the plant. There were some ad hoc operational changes they made. I remember Jerry Gruber talking to me about it. They actually used a tarp to tarp off one section of a pond to make it lower and dissolved oxygen so they could denitrify. So it was really expertise of the operator that made it work. We're still talking to them about designs and upgrades to make it a truly denitrifying plant in the future.
Unless there's more questions on Cambria, I'll move on to the performance measurement. So at the last board meeting in July, I discussed what is Table 6, but we didn't have any data in Table 6. It was just a new dashboard gauge, let's call it. The difference here in this EO report is Table 6 is now plugged in. It's as though we plug the gauge now into a data stream. That data stream is pretty much exclusively Monterey County. So if you look at the first column there, potential drinking water cases, those are systems in violation of the drinking water standard, small systems, county regulated systems that are in violation of the drinking water standard for nitrate. And then what you see as you move across there are cases that we propose to work on based on our capacity. That's our target in the next column. And then we're measuring the different phases of completion for those cases. Those are the subsequent three columns. The information underneath that supplies what each of those columns means, or the headers in those columns. But what we're trying to do there through this is reflect our values, which are, and our priorities, protect human health, and then also measure it and hold ourselves accountable for getting it done. So now we've got a gauge, now we're plugging our gauge into real data too. Ultimately, what we'd like to do is feed all of the county's small systems, that is Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, San Benito, Santa Cruz, et cetera, into this. But Monterey County is the most advanced in data management relative to the other counties. So it's easiest for us to get a hold of their data and manage it effectively. Kind of a little bit goes back to the conversation Karen was having about how data gets fed to you and how easy or laborious it is to handle that data. So Monterey County small system data is the easiest for us to handle and port into this measure.
I have a question. Remind me how the EJCW study and the CURES partial completion of the grant that they received to identify potential residents who might be drinking contaminated water, because I thought we had a higher number that have replacement water, more than two.
Right. So you raise a great point. This is for small systems, and let me back up actually and explain. So EJCW, Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, is an operation that's based in Sacramento but has a Salinas office. And we have a contract with them to supply safe drinking water, typically bottled water, primarily in the Las Lomas area of northern Monterey County. Most of the recipients are domestic well-dependent individuals. That won't show up here. That's a donut hole still in the data. What we're talking about in this dashboard gauge is small systems.
Okay.
Those domestic wells actually are under the regulatory radar or floor. So they're not being tracked by a county in terms of risk is not being tracked by a county for domestic wells. Not unique in Monterey County, though, that reality. So all that's coming through the gauge right now is just Monterey County small systems.
Okay.
You know.
We don't have any consolidations happening at all. There was a failed attempt in Monterey or something.
There are several attempts in motion in Monterey County. They're slow. They're very slow to watch. Painfully slow. One of the communities some of us have been to, Santa Teresa Apartments, is a real viable candidate. It's also on the list for a UCLA's pilot project. It's a viable candidate. It's about 3,000 feet northeast of Soledad, and Soledad is actually willing to consolidate it in. It's about 11 small houses. It will take a process. You know, it's probably a 3 to 5 year time cycle for it to happen. Which, and I've spoken of this before, is that there's almost two stages to replacement water. There's the interim stage, which is the bridge to the final solution, and sometimes there's actually two final solutions. it's much more complicated. You know, as you get to know more about it, you realize, wow, this is really complex. So UCLA in this scenario that I just explained is the bridge or the interim solution to the permanent solution, which is hopefully consolidation into Solidin. That's one example of where it may happen. There's another example. Alpine Court is in Gonzales. It is a small mobile home park, a perfect candidate for consolidation by the community. The city is not supportive of consolidation in that scenario. So that one has a tougher road to hoe in terms of getting consolidated or getting safe drinking water.
Which city?
Alpine Court. We did not. We might have gone to that on one of the EJ tours. I don't think so.
They
fell off the UCLA candidate list, too. Mm-hmm. They have a struggling septic system as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that created so much complexity that UCLA backed away from that site.
Mm-hmm. So about consolidation potential with which city?
Gonzales.
Gonzales.
Right. That's, you know, I'm not putting that as a high likelihood at this point in time.
Just as an aside, I would like to see the Environmental Justice and Drinking Water Project summary update that Angela creates, Angela Schroeder, if we could add that as a new section to just note that potential for consolidation of disadvantaged communities into larger municipal systems and Santa Teresa and Alpine Court, just so that we keep it on the radar. And it should any potential come for us to weigh in or assist or support, etc.
Right. That's a perfect scenario for what we've been talking about for
mm-hmm.
board member engagement and
mm-hmm.
participation. Yeah, I agree. That's a great suggestion.
Okay, great. Thank you.
One caveat I want to raise is that not this fiscal year, but at the start of last fiscal year, Division of Drinking Water received new authority to force consolidation to happen. And it'd be great if Jeff Densmuir was here, because he could explain their regulations probably better than I can. But they're testing that out. It's new regulation, so they're testing that out with likely willing candidates as opposed to taking the hard road first thing out of the gate. And I don't know the status of any consolidation, but I think that's a place where we can also connect, is have calls with the DDW offices in our region and to feed into that supplemental addition you just suggested, Dr. Hunter, to the table is, okay, so where's DDW exerting their authority, their new authority, with respect to consolidation to benefit disadvantaged communities in our region?
Yes,
so. Not presently, there's not a column for that, and I don't want to suggest that it's misleading. We just wanted to be fully transparent about the gap between what we're capable of and the pent-up demand for safe drinking water. Sometimes you have to surface the information to have action take place. So that's Monterey County you're looking at, and there's ballpark, there's 200 cases in violation of the drinking water standard. We're proposing, we're not actually working on, we're proposing that our target is we'll work on 7 cases, we'll initiate 7 cases and work on them.
So as we move into the future with this, I would guess that the 200 comes down and that the number of resolved cases goes up, but I'm not sure if there is a column for resolved cases that were resolved through no action or through
So those cases are chronic reporting in violation of the drinking water standard. It's the only way they would come off or not need us to address is that they would, the concentration in the well would fall below the drinking water standard, and then the 200 number would go down to 199 if one of those cases. It's those need investigation by definition because they're in violation. That's the only reason they show up on that. If that makes sense. Those are cases we would work on. We potentially will investigate.
Okay,
cases.
So short
known violations, but due to their work on only potentially going to take it up as water cases after that time.
Right. Right, as we have capacity. Right.
And as we get data from other counties, that 200 number ain't going down.
Right. Yeah, that's one county reporting.
I'm wondering if it's going to give the message that we're not doing much, that delta between what we would all like resolved versus what we can resolve.
Yes.
But we now have the drinking water division,
right,
which is part of the state water board, and, you know, with
right.
your predecessor, you know, we're very frustrated of not having enough resource to address those issues, and we felt strongly that we need to increasingly tap on the shoulder of our sister agency
right.
and say, hey, you know, you're the drinking water division.
Right.
Here we have the information, here we have the data.
How
help
we
us deal with it.
Right, right. So Division of Drinking Water has a revolving fund that can come help on this. The cleanup and abatement account can come help on this in terms of finances. In Dr. Hunter's board member meeting report, she mentioned RCAC, which is a technical assistance agency that helps disadvantaged communities. The cleanup and abatement account and other sources of funding can get technical support paid for these communities. A lot of the solution rests with our working together with, as Dr. Wolf points out, I'll add to that a little, the Division of Drinking Water and the local environmental health agency. I'll throw that one in there too, because in this case, those are beneath what is typically regulated by the division. They're in the domain of the local health agency in most cases. Not all counties is that the case. The Division of Drinking Water for San Benito County oversees San Benito County. For small systems. But Bruce, that's a way of us tallying what the need is out there so that we can better get agencies' attentions. You know, both Division of Drinking Water ourselves, decision makers, Board of Supervisors, health agency directors and staff, you know, we're hoping to quantifying the number, we understand what our need is, and then through time, better turn resources at it. You know.
Since 1 + 2 + 3 is 6, and there's 7.
Right.
Is it because 1 is not the
target? Right. Yeah, that's a target. 7 is the target. 6 is where we're at. In some stage. Now, there's 3 columns there. That's like the progression of a case. There's 3 columns. And so we haven't initiated a 7th case yet.
All right. And finally, it says there's 1.3 PYs. Is that person years?
Yeah.
So approximately 1.3 PYs are available to work on drinking water cases. Is it erroneous for me to divide 1.3 PYs by 7 to understand how long it takes to resolve each one of these?
Probably, yeah. Because
you're doing other things.
Yes. That's splintered over at least 3 staff, maybe 4 staff. That accumulative PY.
So ballpark, how much time in weeks or days of a person's staff time does it take to work on an average case?
To resolve a case? Let me actually rephrase it in a different context, because I don't know the sort of our cost of getting to completion. It varies a lot by complexity of case, I will say that. It's much like cleaning up an underground tank case. Some are quick and some are not. You know, there's a lot of complexity issues or variables in and or into that.
It must be an average, right?
Yeah, you can create an average, but then if you hold that up to any individual case, you go, wow, that one's really cheap or that one's really expensive relative to the average.
Well, I was saying if we were to try to lobby for more PYs,
yeah,
how would you make that? What, 200 would require? Yeah. So, do you have any ballpark figure, like a week, a month?
I would say it's closer to a year and a half, maybe.
For a case?
Yeah.
Of staff time?
Calendar time.
Process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Staff time's a little trickier to measure.
And just for your information, we had been making proposal in the budget under human rights for safe drinking water to get additional staff.
Right.
Right.
We painfully
worked on that one.
Right. Yeah, it's such a big issue. I'm surprised at the Delta.
Well, yeah. There was a budget put together for all the regions, in addressing this issue. And this was also gonna be a way of augmenting our staff resource on all matters pertaining to, say, drinking water, which includes nitrate contamination, we were gonna be able to get that. But
virtually every region is confronted with nitrate impacts. Either from a variety of sources. We tend to be at the lead on these issues. They're also quite recognized in Region 5 southern portion,
mm-hmm.
the San Joaquin Valley. Other regions aren't quite as either aware or engaged or overt about what the relative need is. And we're trying to be very transparent about that, because we think in so doing you can better start to understand, okay, so how do we resource that with money and with staff?
And that was in the 17-18
right.
budget.
The coming
cycle,
budget cycle.
The coming cycle, and it's going through review within EPA,
right.
Then it goes to the
finance and the governor's office.
And, they're all kick the tires and try to compress things.
So the 17-18 might have more PYs.
That's a possibility.
And by then we'll know if it's 300, 350,
between
the various counties.
But to your point, Bruce, this has been recognized that we had a shortfall. So we were focusing in all regions and looking at, okay, how can we elevate this? Because, if it was just our region saying we need more PYs for this, our chances of getting extra staff would be nil. So, we kind of worked together in collaboration with the EOs, and we said we'd like to see statewide for all the regions more PYs, and I forgot the number that we're asked for, but it's going through the system.
It's substantial.
Yeah.
It was 20-30 range.
Yeah. It went
statewide.
Yeah.
Statewide.
So
is it statewide now? About 6. I mean,
what was the number you read?
I'm just guessing 6.
No, that you read. Was it 1.3?
Yeah.
That's about ballpark what it is statewide.
1.3.
Yeah.
Not per 9 times 1.3
per region, or not per region.
We're
it's
the,
us.
Yeah, we're at the front of this.
We're fat cats.
All right, so let's move on.
I have one more thought.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. So, if we're doing this with 1.3 and we have a target of 7 cases, and I'm trying to ballpark, like Bruce was trying to ballpark, how much time, not calendar, but staff time average a case takes, it sounds to me like a case takes something close to a couple, 3 months of staff time to resolve. And even if we assume that Monterey is one of the worst counties, a safe assumption, that number's got to probably come close to doubling by the time we get better data and add the other counties in. So
I mean, if that happens, then we need 100 more PYs to be able to effectively do it, and that obviously ain't going to happen. So I'm just wondering if there is a way to create some pressure on the counties to do a piece of this. And I mean, I would think, similarly to the way we talked about doing a very localized stream report, health watershed health report cards, before we did a webinar asking cities and counties to send staff to learn how to use our tools, you know, we might want to do a little press on the state of the, you know, the number of groundwater cases out there and what our resources are to deal with them, and, you know, find a way to do that that doesn't absolutely piss off the county so that we've just burned bridges, but that creates some actual political pressure. Because it just doesn't seem like we are ever going to get the resources to come close to catching up to this. And this is the absolute top, if I recall correctly, this is the number one priority in our region is human health. So, you know, if it's not conceivable for us to get the PYs to do it, then obviously we have to have a different paradigm.
But I think the vehicle, Mike, is the regional vehicle is county health. And I think you were spot on mentioning that. And I think there's progress being made because, for example, if you take county health, San Luis Obispo, as an example, now for every new well drilled, you have to have a water quality sampling required. This is a major accomplishment. You know, before it was, well, if you get 5 gallons a minute, so legal well, go for it. Never mind if it's full of arsenic. So I think considering, I mean, you know, in an ideal world, we would have a lot more staff available. If anything, we're fortunate to be in a cycle of being able to add staff, where remember for a long time we had to do more with less. It's working closely with county health and kind of, you know,
and DDW
push.
That's a step forward to get monitoring on new wells, but that's not much help to those 193 systems in Monterey County.
No, all I was
there's a way we can put some pressure on to have politicians telling staff in that county, we want some resources devoted to this, and I think we should see if we can figure out if there's a way to do that without burning relationships.
But my example, Mike, was not to replace the solution. My example was that because of a close effort that has been made by staff, for example, with San Luis Obispo County, this is a measurable change that took place. Likewise, in San Luis Obispo County, every private well owner has received a letter from County Public Health saying, hey, you really ought to test your wells. These are the resources. So all I was trying to illustrate is that there's ways to collaborate with county, and I was just using this as kind of a little vignette. And in Monterey, yes, the discussion needs to be with county health. What are you going to do addressing this? Because that's part of your responsibility, you know? And that may help us from having to carry all the, you know, all the load.
May I make a suggestion?
Absolutely.
One last thought about the dashboard and the columns. Phase one, phase two, phase three, any one of those could potentially be occurring in partnership or in collaboration or coordination with County Environmental Health or Division of Drinking Water. It would be interesting if we could figure out a way to reflect that where they're actively engaged with us, and as those numbers change, I mean, right now, you know, maybe it's all six, maybe not, but as those numbers change, it would be interesting to see what, you know, how many we've taken up, how many we're actually getting support or some type of assistance. And if it's reflected here again, that goes to the concern that Mr. Delgado expressed about, you know, in some way, this almost says we're not doing anything, let alone enough. But I think it reflects resources being directed to this issue, and it reflects our efforts to take this issue into a broader arena, because we know we cannot provide the solution as a sole entity. So I you know, I'd like to see something that reflects that.
A fair amount of what goes on with respect to working through these cases, it goes on in the separation of functions existence, that is the enforcement component of our organization. As EO, I'm less aware of the specifics of what's going on, but I can ask them to better quantify what the estimate of a project time life is. How many hours does it take to get to completion on that? That would serve us as we try to work towards what's our real need. You know, when we're talking about budgeting cycles, what's our real need? What's our perception of real need? Or maybe ours and the county's perception of need. The legislature ultimately can fund positions to the county too, or counties, not just necessarily the water board or DDW, any of us. That's a conversation we can have internally to try to, I don't feel like I could answer your question, Mr. Delgado, very well, in terms of how many hours does it take. Okay. So I can ask internally.
I can maybe add to the conversation a little bit. So this takes up most of my time, this issue, drinking water issue, and enforcement staff and program staff work on it to a lesser degree. It has taken hundreds of hours of my time in direct negotiations with responsible parties to provide replacement water in certain cases. So landowners and growers who are responsible for the contamination of a well, we're in direct communication, direct negotiations with them to provide replacement water on individual cases. And because it's something that has never been done before in the state of California, where a grower and a landowner who leases to a grower has been required to provide replacement water due to nitrate contamination, we've taken a much different path than we do in other cases. Like in a dry cleaner, for example, where in a case like a dry cleaner or a gas station or some other source that is a traditional industrial source, we have a very straightforward approach. It can be very quick. It's very regulatory. And it's very defined. But in these cases, because it's so sensitive and it's a widespread issue, and for many of the responsible parties, it's new. We take a slower and more careful approach, and it takes way more time. And so with that, that's part of it. That's part of the picture. The other part of the picture, and what you have touched on in your conversation, is the role of different entities. There's the role of myself working for the regional board, and as John said, under the umbrella of separation of functions, like what is my role and the regional board's role? What is the Division of Drinking Water's role? What is County Environmental Health's role? And we've been better defining those roles over the past couple of years. And I think there's an expectation on, for example, County Health or the Division of Drinking Water that, you know, it's the Division of Drinking Water, so they should be addressing this issue, that drinking water in their title. Right. But the Division of Drinking Water has statutory authority. They regulate the water purveyor. So a water company that is providing water to a development, for example, if the water exceeds the drinking water standard for nitrate, the Division of Drinking Water can take enforcement action against the water purveyor. So we have water purveyors calling us saying that Division of Drinking Water, your parent agency, is taking action against us for pollution that we are not causing. It's being caused by our neighbors. So you, regional board, have to do something about this. And the way the authority works, the statutory authority, the regional board has the sole authority to require, to identify the responsible parties for the pollution and require them to provide replacement water. So the Division of Drinking Water does not have that authority. The regional board has that authority. And we're pursuing that through, as John mentioned, the separation of functions process. So while there's while there are funds available through the state board to help solve these problems, we have to identify, we at our level have to identify the responsible parties and then go through the process of talking to them, hopefully getting them to provide replacement water and requiring it where necessary. We have multiple cases ongoing right now where we're doing that. As far as time goes, how much time does it take? Like I said, hundreds of hours of my time have been spent on this just in the past year, each of the past few years. And we're trying to get more staff resources to do more of these cases. We expect them to go quicker as we do more of them and the people involved become more aware of the problem and how we go about solving the problem and what the regulatory requirements are. It's a very sensitive thing, and we're trying to do it carefully. And at the same time, we're trying to acknowledge that the time is of the essence because people are drinking contaminated water. And patience, and you know, is running out on the part of those people who are on the end of having to drink the contaminated water or deal with it. Their patience is wearing thin, and we hear about that a lot. So we're trying to balance those two things. We are getting more resources. Dr. Hunter mentioned yesterday a local program that we took advantage of, and we're hiring two graduate students, almost full-time, 32 hours a week. There'll be two of them helping us on these issues. I'm also actively engaged with the State Board's Office of Enforcement, and they have staff that can help us on this issue. So I'm talking to Chris Kerrigan, who's the director, about directing some of his resources to this issue in our region so we have more people working on these cases. And as you may have heard, the Office of Enforcement is also dealing with this issue on their own, separate from us. So they have an action that they've initiated in the Salinas Valley to try and deal with this problem on a larger scale instead of the case-by-case approach that we are using. So in parallel, they're working on that effort. It's confidential. We are not part of it. We're not privy to it. We can't attend meetings. They don't talk to us about it. But that is another effort that is going on, and it's a realization that this problem is huge, and trying to tackle it on a single case-by-case basis is massively resource-intensive and takes too long. So they realize that, and they're trying this alternative approach. I hope it works. But until then, we have to keep doing what we are doing, because that approach is speculative. So we could bring an item to the board, if you like, and discuss this further. We could discuss the role of the regional board, statutory authority, role of drinking water, the Division of Drinking Water, their statutory authority. We could have someone from Division of Drinking Water attend, maybe a panel discussion with them, if you wanted to do that. It's a very comprehensive and complicated issue, and we're trying to address it on multiple fronts with multiple entities and resources. But I provide the most clarity on is that when we look to other entities to help us solve the problem, it's usually where we are successful is usually in getting resources or funding to help with a drinking water system or consolidation, as you've mentioned. We don't have, to my knowledge, we don't have any consolidation efforts that are actually underway right now. We have several that are being discussed, but I don't know of any that are actually happening. But as far as the authority to deal with the pollution problem, we are the only entity that has the authority to deal with that. So when we go to other entities looking for help, they often turn it around, you know, initially in our initial conversations, turn it around and say, that's your job. You know, and we understand that it's our job and we are taking action on it. So when we talk to other entities, we have to be careful to not give the impression that we're asking them to do what is our statutory authority and responsibility, and only ours. We have just have to be careful about that.
All right. I think the good news is that every time you close one of these seven target cases, there's many families that are benefiting. So I agree with you, Mike, that we should not stop anything that you're doing in this regard. And I like your idea of a future agenda having, to save time today, having maybe it's one of those items we have on day two of a light agenda meeting where we can look at this from different perspectives and maybe we can discuss with Jean-Pierre offline what the board, what kind of perspectives the board wants to hear about. I'm not sure how to frame that, but I like your idea of a separate agenda item in the future. And this reminds me, this being the dashboard that John has created with potential water cases, it reminds me of a similar off-site when we were in Watsonville. And Michael Thomas kind of gave us the stark news of unmet needs and a line across the paper. And below that, there were a lot of tasks we're not doing that were basically unmet needs. And it was kind of a shocker because they were all important, but they weren't being addressed for lack of attention. And this sounds like that falls in. So my final comment is that it would be nice to amplify this dashboard as much as possible so that it sort of told the story of the unmet need as best we can in a form that was easily presentable to other entities as well as the public, so that everyone who saw it would say, wow, look how far behind we are on small drinking communities, small communities not having clean water. So I don't know what you would do to this, but I'm sure you will have ideas. But it's a little bit difficult to pull out of it sort of the shocking unmet story that lies herein.
Yeah. I agree that, for example, the 200 number might, that's on this table, it might give you the impression that that's the larger picture of cases that are out there,
yeah,
which is bad enough, but it's not. That is a narrow slice of the larger pie that we have identified as a subgroup that we need to focus on. While we are trying to define that, at the same time, we're trying to define that larger picture. It's much larger than 200. We know it's several hundred larger than that. We don't know the actual size yet, so we're continuing to work on that and define it. And we can explain to you that larger picture in the categories of systems and individual wells within that, that make up the whole picture. For context,
so I mentioned earlier that there are 200 systems in Monterey County. There's, as Michael mentioned, there's hundreds of others in the remaining counties, and I also mentioned that there is no accounting currently for the number of domestic wells that serve up unsafe drinking water. But that is thousands of wells that serve up unsafe drinking water, domestic wells, individual households.
Did you have a comment?
I mean, just, I do think that it would be very helpful to have an additional presentation about this with related agencies, just because when Stephen Moore gave us his presentation about Proposition 1 and some of the funding allocated, he did indicate that much of the money so far has gone towards consolidation and consolidation efforts throughout the state. And so I was just sort of wondering, you know, what some of these ideas for consolidation that might be floating around in Monterey County, sort of where in the process does this work that the Regional Water Board fall into that? And it sounds to me like here we are trying to identify a source of the contamination to people's drinking water for the purposes of then paying for an interim water source for families. But in the longer term, I'm wondering if this part has to happen first before, you know, additional funding from Prop 1, for example, we're able to attain to be able to move towards a longer-term solution of consolidation.
Yes. Yes. So the we do play a role in that. One of the cases that we're working on right now is San Lucas. And in I issued a cleanup and abatement order a few years ago requiring the local landowner and grower to provide replacement water to the community. And in that case, it has been cooperative. The landowner and grower were willing to provide replacement water, and they did so. They did not fight the requirement at all. And so they have been providing replacement water for about 3 years now. Meanwhile, the county and the local water district for San Lucas, which is a very tiny water district, I think they have 2 part-time employees, they are trying to get a longer-term solution for San Lucas, which is a community of about 300 people and mostly migrant workers. So the longer-term solution that is preferred by the county and the local water district is a pipeline from King City. And it's about 7 or 8 miles, and the price tag on that is about $7 million. So it's very expensive, it's very controversial, and the county and water district are trying to get funding from the state board to do that. So the state board, to give you an example of how all these parts tend to come together, state board funding staff contact us and say, why would the state board provide funding for a solution here when you region board have identified responsible parties for the pollution? And we have to work together and explain that the problem that we are addressing is nitrate. There are other problems there associated with water quality and water supply. And we can't make these responsible parties due to the nitrate problem responsible for these other larger picture problems, other water quality and water supply. So we have to educate the grant staff for the State Water Board about the larger picture. And in doing so, they said, okay, at first their answer was no, because the region board is requiring responsible parties to deal with this. But now they are willing to provide funding, but not necessarily a pipeline. What they would like to see the locals do is investigate further a well, a deeper well with a treatment system, because it would be cheaper, about $2.5 million versus $7 million. So going through this process and talking through all of these different options and dealing with the different entities that are involved, us, County Health, Division of Drinking Water, 2 sets of grants staff at the State Water Board, and then the other entities that are involved, is it's a complicated, complex, you know, process that takes time and a lot of negotiation. So we're doing it, but it's slow. Does that answer your question? So we have that going on in multiple cases. You know, there's another community southeast of Soledad where we're doing almost mirroring that process. One of the issues that recently came up, and I expect it to come up more and more, especially in the Salinas Valley, is where growers and property owners are looking for financially reasonable solutions to these problems, to providing replacement water. So they are looking into using existing ag wells, irrigation wells that have clean water to provide replacement water. that raises a whole series of issues and problems that have to be dealt with, like ownership of that well over the long term, access to it, maintenance, legal rights to that well and that water, and whether the well meets the design criteria for a water supply well that the Division of Drinking Water enforces. So this week and last week we're having negotiations around that for the San Vicente Mutual Water Company sublease of Solidan. And by the way, it does not look like in that case the ag well can be used for water supply. The Division of Drinking Water informed us that they wouldn't approve it, as it does not meet drinking water standards. And they are concerned, the Division of Drinking Water is concerned, that of setting a precedent. If they allow exceptions, then they're going to see this, they expect to see it across the valley, and it can raise these other problems that I just mentioned that are cascading and can thwart the effort, you know, and negate it. So they're trying to be very careful about the ultimate solution to make sure it's a viable, reliable, long-term solution.
So if I, you know, we can maybe bring this to conclusion, you know, as I think we all recognize, you know, our stumbling block, it takes a lot of time, and there's issue of resources. So again, back to the budget of 2017 and 18, we looked at one approach, which was for the human right to safe drinking water. And there's another element in budget justification that is used successfully. It's called unmet mandate. So as a regional board, when we have mandates and requirements and we're unable to fulfill those because of lack of resource, you know, you can ask for additional staff. So what we have done is ask for additional staff in enforcement. And, you know, the area that Michael works in is enforcement. So we thought if we can have more position in enforcement, you know, then we can address these issues. That is also right now working its way in the budget process. So we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed that we'll be successful using these different strategies to get more support. And so, you know, I feel the pain, you know, where you're saying, well, you know, we're not making progress, but there's efforts being made in trying to correct this by, you know, that having a better equilibrium of resource. If there's anything else you wanted to add to that.
I was just going to wrap it with this thought. Okay, so a couple of years ago, we could not have produced this table for you. We could not have quantified what the need was in this way or what the gap is. So the danger in presenting this is people will say, oh my gosh, look at what you're not doing. And that's not the intended outcome here. The intended outcome is we need to get on that, and we need to get resources to get on that, you know. I love, and it really encouraged Angela, I love what this tells about us. It's transparent and it's accountable. We're creating an honesty about what the reality is, warts and all, of our region, and we're showcasing that we're working our way through it. We understand it is a huge mountain to climb, but we still have to go at it, you know. And whether it's a enforcement-based strategy from the region, an enforcement-based strategy from state board, or just a programmatic-driven strategy that we try to relate with two other agencies, I think the more things we do, the more people are going to get safe drinking water out of it. There's no silver bullet here. None of those is going to be the thing to do. You know, that's why we've done a dance with UCLA to try to get UCLA to bring its pilot project here. You know, everything that brings one more treatment system or one more long-term solution is good for somebody in Salinas Valley or somewhere else that doesn't have safe drinking water. So I don't want to have this be, oh my gosh, look what we're not doing reality. This is us changing who we are and being transparent about what the reality is in our region and what we're doing about it. So I've ended on that. Okay, so there's just two more items. One is the supplemental on Buckley Road. You received two supplementals for the EO report. One is on Buckley Road, and it's an update on the project. A reminder, Buckley Road is a solvent cleanup site. The solvent is referred to as TCE or trichloroethylene. And staff have sampled 67 different wells. This is in a rural part of San Luis Obispo. 13 wells exceed the safe drinking water standard for this solvent. Recently, the airport, owned by the county, conducted an investigation and found no evidence of, preliminary field results indicate no evidence of that site being a source for the TCE and groundwater adjacent to the airport. So staff will be looking at other sites that potentially were the source of this, and we will reinitiate an investigation at those sites. What we do here is we take the most likely site and then we move down from there. And so we're moving down in terms of the likely site list here. We're likely also going to have a community meeting this fall to dissect the results from the field investigation and talk about what our path looks like for going forward. This will be the second community meeting we've had with the Buckley Road folks. Any questions on that? And the last item is a promised update on, it's the last supplemental, on the 401 cert for Salinas Channel Maintenance. We had that in front of us in July. I signed that on August 31st as promised at about 4:58 p.m. And staff, I want to recognize John Rohrbaugh and Phil Hammer. Staff did a wonderful job of, this is the most advanced 401 cert probably ever issued by this region. And such a remarkable step forward from past Salinas River flood protection efforts. It's a showcase of collaboration too, from farmers and property owners to the Nature Conservancy to Monterey County Water Resources Agency. It's an unusual cast of characters to see together, and it's a good story in that respect. So any questions on that?
Yes. My question is, I noticed that what was not included was the river management strategy that we talked about. And it looks like it was done because the agency raised concerns about the scope and timing of the requirements. So I'm kind of wondering, given that it's a 10-year permit,
right,
what could be the issue with timing? I mean, you could have just allowed them to
do a very late in the cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So because then I see that you are making a requirement of the subsequent permit that would be issued.
You won't get another certification without having completed that plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to, I think John Rohrbaugh is here.
Yes.
John can provide some answers as he was witness to the negotiation process to that. Intimately involved in it.
I'm still John Rohrbaugh with the 401 unit. So the question is, why was that long-term management strategy taken out of the certification? There were a couple things. One is the primary change is, it was written in the certification before that they had to complete it before the 10-year certification period was over. The way it's written right now, they have to complete it before the next permit period begins. Semantically, there's not a big difference between those two things, but the second was much more palatable to the water agency than the first. So I agree with you why it made a difference to the water agency to do it that way. But there are a couple of things. One was that that they really felt that the holistic watershed assessment that we were requiring, they needed to look at the stream management program in light of the reservoir management, in light of the lagoon management, in light of lots of other things on the river. There were some concerns that while it's under our authority to require a long-term management strategy of the agency, there were some concerns about whether or not we could require that kind of holistic approach attached to a permit for a particular project. So the way we solved that was to detach it from this particular project. Say, we're not going to be able to keep issuing you permits without a long-term strategy in place. But rather than require you to complete that long-term strategy as a condition of this permit, we're going to say we're not going to be issuing permits after this to you unless you have that plan completed.
But that essentially says, yes, we have the authority to do exactly what you don't want to accept right now. We're just going to postpone it for 10 years.
Well, we're not postponing it for 10 years. We're requiring it before 10 years in the first place.
Well, I see that you're requiring something, but it looks like it's even more ballistic. Right? And I'm thinking, now I could really buy into the argument that you don't have authority to do that.
Okay.
Because it goes beyond the stream remediation effort itself once you start getting into the larger watershed and its interactions with other river management activities within the watershed. You know, I then begin to think, God, this is getting attenuated. Here's a specific 401 cert permit for activities within this river. Speak into this. Okay. So I'm a little confused about that, and I guess just disappointed that we didn't include something where even in 5 years we get something back from them, they should have an idea what their plan's going to be.
So I don't know if this is going to help you, but I want just to add a little perspective. First, let's talk about what we will get, which is assessment of a connected or more holistic impacts and what that looks like into the future from the work that they're doing based on the lessons learned in the demonstration project in the first 5 years and again in the second 5 years. That alone is a big chunk of what we were hoping to get in that, I can't remember exactly what we called it, but the long-term watershed management strategy. Secondly, it's fair, I guess you could say, we found it reasonable to say the limits of what should be required in this